Okay. I figured I'd start out this topic with the most volatile aspect of this definition. Okay. This has slipped and slipped as the years have gone by, and it depends on what type of game you're talking about. This is MMOs, but of course we can always talk about other casual versus hardcore debates. But what is a casual gamer? Especially in the MMO sense. I don't know if I should put up for definition. I don't want to give my own definition. That is just asking for trouble.
Casual gamer is someone who plays less than I do. A hardcore player is one who plays more than I do.
So you're the middle boundary.
Anyone
making that statement.
Yes, yeah.
That's also, well, you're also a professional. So some people may think of casual gamers as someone in the business world working 9 to 5, coming home, kids screaming, something. They don't have time to invest. Or they might think of it someone as someone who has different priorities. They might have free time, but they also have other interests. They like games and want to play it a little bit. But as a developer, how do you cater to all these audiences and the disparities made between like catering to one and then catering to the other? That's what I'm interested in, like design around that aspect. And I've seen, like, if you played MMOs, you've probably seen the debate raging, or at some point, like, if something's nerfed, someone goes, oh, they're just catering to the casual market, and they're ruining my game. This isn't my game anymore. And they threaten to cancel their subscriptions, even though they don't. and that's also something to point out, like, forum goers itself. Like, people, like, that's also a line that people fail to realize. The fact that you're even going to a forum means you cross the line. Like, they sit down in the forums like, I'm a casual hardcore gamer. I care a lot, but I only have so long to play. And then there's also players who get lives after they've played hardcore. Like, oh, my wife had a kid. I can't play hardcore anymore. Or they just change.
People who go cold turkey.
People go cold turkey.
What was that?
I've tried.
Huh? What was that like?
I'm 3 years clean from World of Warcraft.
Oh, my.
Do you get a coin?
Do you have a sponsor too?
I just canceled my
subscription. Actually, my guild broke up. That was the moment.
Yeah, that actually,
like, yeah, okay,
that's
done.
A pretty huge.
I thought that was cute. Also, the social aspect. Like, some players might consider themselves casual because they don't invest themselves in the other number-crunching aspects of the game. Like, oh, I'm a role player. But you might be playing 40 hours a week still. So
hardcore role player.
Hardcore role player.
Yeah, they exist.
Or I'm a crafter, so I definitely spend my time farming or playing in the auction house. But I don't consider myself invested in the game heavily, or I have other things to do. Or you might even have something, I think WoW has like an add-on where you can watch your auctions outside the game. So you might be sitting there at work and engaging your market share as you're making other money.
Apparently, I have a friend who plays EVE Online.
Oh, yes,
and
that EVE Online.
Apparently, EVE, there's a program that lets you know when your skill training has completed, and
oh,
even though you're outside the game, it's like an alarm clock. And so he says, you know, I'll be doing some activity, and then I'll hear
beep, beep, beep.
Skill training complete.
Oh, if they had that for a while. Well, they don't really have the offline.
Yeah.
Yeah, so EVE is that special in that regard. Also, okay, I wrote down tons of stuff that's going to get lost. I was concerned about definition, because that's definitely, like, even people on the forums will sit there and fight, like, oh, I'm not hardcore. Like, no, I'm denying it outright.
You're arguing on a forum.
Exactly, there you go. or I'm a casual gamer, but I logged on this. They don't realize there's players who don't care. Patch notes? What's a patch note? Like, something just changes and things happen.
Yeah.
That's
actually, I think, an important observation for us as people in the industry. There's a guy in my office who's relatively new to the industry, and he keeps saying things like, oh, this is way too easy. Anyone could get through this. Or, I'm not a hardcore player.
Yeah.
And his perceptions are just so not actually tied to the mainstream game audience that we are aiming at.
Yeah. And then also that, like, when perceptions change over time, like, you might have a veteran designer in the office who decided, who's grown up on, like, wizardry and stuff, or something completely hardcore, and now they're designing content for the new audience. Like we need more feedback in the game. It's like, oh, I'm just going to put a button in, that makes them win. I'm like, now you're being spiteful. that's not fair. You have to see it from their perspective. It's like, you're calling your players stupid. I'm like, no, they just don't want to invest enough time to trial and error.
So have you done a definition?
We haven't done one.
Have you tried? Oh, okay.
This was a way to instigate, like, some conversation. This was my way of breaking in.
Okay.
If you have a definition, if you feel...
No, I just... you obviously have some kind of perception that you're doing.
I do, yes. I do have my biases.
Well, perhaps you could share it.
I could share it. I do like the definition that I heard about the casual being the person who... They still have free time. They don't want to... They have other interests that draws them away. Like, they might be easily more apt to... Like, oh, friends are going out and partying. It's like, oh, yeah, log off, go away. Or cigarette breaks constantly. Like, oh, I don't want to invest in this, or...
That is a totally valid definition, but I am skeptical about whether it helps us as developers.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it does, if you consider it, that person's looking for more of a piecemeal experience, rather than, like, something long, like, a hardcore player might be looking for more an epic, long...
So that might actually be a better definition, where, yeah, the hardcore player consumes content in longer
doses.
You know, longer doses.
Yes, but they also might be in the mood for a casual dose.
Well,
so it's not. That's where it kind of blurs. But I guess I'll put that up there.
I played WoW 3 years ago, so I know the game has evolved since then. But back when I was still playing, that was still the era of the 40-man raid on Molten Core, and
it took 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, and it took a long, long time. And so at that point, essentially the difference between casual and hardcore was, did you do endgame raids?
Yeah.
If you did, you were hardcore. If you didn't, you were casual. You could still play 60 hours a week, but if you just, you know, hacked around the game and did, you know, outside world quests, did a lot of soloing,
PvP.
You were casual.
Yeah. They also have the separate PvP grind.
PvP.
So you could be a casual PvP player. What?
You could be a hardcore PvP player.
And you could be a hardcore. You could be a warlord.
Right, and I think it's like once you got above a certain rank, you were considered.
You had
hardcore.
To, like, organize it at that point.
Yeah, well, you. But to. At that point, to get to the highest level, you had to play it like it was your job. I mean,
yeah.
I heard stories of people who, to get to the highest level, they had to play, honestly, 20 hours out of a day.
Yeah.
And sleep for 4 and play 20 more hours.
And yeah, and now, especially nowadays, that is blurred. Like, you
yeah.
can't just say, oh, a raider is only hardcore.
Right.
Because
well,
there's
now
more,
raids
there's new levels of raiding, there's the 10-man raids.
Yeah.
There's something you can do in a night.
Mm-hmm.
There's, they've definitely opened up that. And there's not as much gear gating. Like, back in the day, Anchorage, you'd have to have all the... You'd have to build up your resistance set, you'd have to build up this other set, in Motri you have the radiant sets.
It was a very,
you need
very
a specific
clear,
set of armor
very
to get the job
clear
done.
Gear progression, yeah.
Yes.
You needed Molten Core gear to do Blackwing Lair, you needed Blackwing Lair gear to do Anchorage.
And that was very intimidating for someone who was
Anchorage gear
brand new, or someone who had started playing much later.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is helping me with my definition.
Well, I don't know, because I don't have all that much time to play, which is why I'm more attracted to virtual worlds where I can dip in and dip out, and there are games in there that I do participate in.
Mm-hmm.
But I find, now I'm vaguely attracted to Eve, but the thing is, I haven't gotten through the whole book or the whole story, so I don't know all the different parties. And
Eve is a notoriously bad.
You know, but it would seem to me that can't, you know, if I want to play some of the games, can't there be some way where I can, you know, when you buy a new product, you get two things: a quick start guide, and then you get an in-depth for the features. I don't know why a lot of games that are considered so quote-unquote hardcore games don't have quick start guides
mm-hmm.
that are easier to use.
Yeah.
So I can play something and do something instead of reading through everything, you know, and, you know, mainlining with an IV for a couple of hours.
Uh-huh. That's either bad design practices
or... I was
going to
say, new player experience.
Yeah.
So you can make something
yeah,
that introduces someone to the
what
world.
What game it is, there's a lot of MMOs that allow you to jump in.
And there's some, like, there's whole Eve's whole perception of, like, eliteness. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm playing the game, I'm awesome, so I figured this out, and clawed my... And Darkfall.
Mm.
Like, Darkfall will just rip you to shreds the minute you get out of anywhere, because it's
yeah.
based on old Ultima like
mm-hmm.
mentality, and people wanted to play that. So it was definitely the elitism associated with that too, was a fighting contention point.
You literally can put almost anyone in front of WoW and they'll figure out how to
yeah.
play with them.
And Stonewall WoW developed that. It didn't
start off as easy, but now it's literally anyone.
Yeah.
And your cage is
but will people just let you into a guild just like that?
Oh,
yeah. Granted, you're going to have to, like, that's kind of a learning curve, is where you'll start off, you need to know absolutely nothing at the beginning. You'll kind of learn very basic if you don't do any research at all, if you don't do any reading. Then maybe you'll join a guild, you'll learn some more. And then eventually you can get to a point where you either have to
really
learn.
Novice player, you might accidentally end up in a guild the first time you walk into a city.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Someone's
yeah.
trying to get names on their charter.
Yeah. Well, there's also the thing about learning from prior games. Like, for a while, MMOs, everyone learned, like, they learned what they needed to do, like, from Ultima Online or EverQuest, and then they just took that knowledge to other games. So the other games are like, oh, I don't need to tell people how to play, they know how to play an MMO. Now it's, you need the tutorial experience, you need the slow reward system, the introduction, because players will get to a point where they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Okay.
And then they'll stop playing, and they'll stop paying money.
That's something a lot of the hardcore players don't understand, because they've come from a previous
mm-hmm.
game, they have
yeah, they cannot see, like,
whereas,
oh, I have no problem with this.
But whereas WoW has become so popular, for example, that all these people are playing and have never played an MMO or even any game before, and they get in and they don't have the gaming vocabulary, and
WoW
needs that.
I think that emphasis on gaming vocabulary is really the deal, because I've been beta testing a game that's supposed to come out in October, and it's very hard to find people who will help me, because if I ask the right person, they whack me over the head with depending on what kind of weapon they're using. I've been killed so many times already, it's getting out of hand, because there are the kind of tutors, you know, they're making all kinds of assumptions about how I know what to put in my inventory and
mm-hmm.
all that stuff, which I'd like to play the game, because it's an interesting game to me, because you have the preset and have all these other sets going on in there. But most of the time, I just get whacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the game that's notorious for that is Dota.
Oh, okay.
They block people out. I was surprised. I was beta testing Heroes of Nurith.
I've also been
what was it called?
That
Hero. Oh, Dota is
no. But the,
oh,
the game.
The new one.
Yeah.
Heroes of Nurith.
No, that wasn't the one.
Okay.
I was
I'm currently beta testing.
They don't have a tutorial either, which I was hoping they would
do. League of Legends, and there was that curve at first, because
mm-hmm.
at the beginning it was a very small beta test.
Yeah.
But now that it's opened up, it's pretty much kind of, people are much more helpful. So it depends kind of what stage you're on in the game. I mean,
yeah.
But also, I'm just really surprised none of them have included like a one player like.
Yeah, they actually
yeah.
one of the.
How difficult could that be? You know?
I mean,
it just seemed like they dropped the ball.
It's in the FAQ for the Han beta. You know, one of the questions is, I just started playing. I've never played Dota before. How do I play this? And, you know, why am I having such a hard time? And, you know, they say it has a really steep learning curve. We're working on a tutorial for that. But you know.
Yeah, I'd like to add that in a lot of the games I've seen that have done this well have, like, a strong compartmentalization of gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going in and you're like, okay, you have a stick, you're fighting stuff. It's not like you have a stick, you're fighting stuff, you should probably craft some items out of them as you do this,
yeah.
and maybe you should balance your health and your, like, sanity meter.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, no, it's like, okay, you're now going into, you've mastered the combat area of gameplay, we're going to let you into a town now, okay, now you can talk
yeah.
to people, you can buy stuff, we're not going to throw crafting at you yet, because clearly, you know, you're not there yet. When you get to your next later town, there'll be some crafting areas that you can start out in.
Yeah.
Or like just kind of making clean breaks in those, so you can break it to the player very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts out being a super simple game that anyone can walk into.
I'd like to interject there. I think those experiences could benefit from an optional component, like giving it the heading of a tutorial or some other. I think something to that
casual,
level of
hardcore.
Detail.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I guess that's fair.
I mean, you should give the player the option to skip in case they're
that's the problem is when. Someone who thinks they're casual, but
that's,
they know stuff,
that's true.
Skip,
yeah.
and then all of a sudden they have jumped into something way over their head and they're just going to stop.
That's actually one of the biggest complaints now that I have about a game that I otherwise love is Fallout 3. Every time you start a new game, you have to go through the vault, which is... You have a few choices, but for the most part, it's exactly the same every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think the way most people do it is either download a mod that lets them skip right to the point where it says, you know, Has any part of your previous life been unsatisfactory? And if so, what would you change? Change it now. Or make a save game at that point, and every time they want to start again, reload from
I mean, I think the slight difference between something like Fallout and MMO is Fallout, I mean, that is just a really elaborate character creation system where you're going through all this kind of stuff and a little bit extra to learn the game, but also you're kind of making your character at that point. Compare that to an MMO, everyone starts at the same spot, and you can't really say, okay, skip, because then you're going to lose a lot of basics.
We have a skip tutorial because we have the functionality where you're in an instance in Lotro and then it's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, I just want to skip that because I already know how to hit a monster with A. So that works. You can implement it with design decisions. Like Fallout would work because you were a little small child. So maybe that would be a missed opportunity or something. Like, it was nice the first time.
Right.
I mean, I kind of have mixed feelings about tutorials in general because... But a lot of these games are assuming the player has a certain amount of game knowledge already,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the MMOs people play are generally Deku based, and there really aren't going to be any surprises in the tutorial.
Yeah.
One of the things we did on the last game we worked on was to actually find out how accessible your game is to a new user. Don't give it to someone who's played games before. Get your grandma.
Give it to me.
Get your grandma to play.
Give it to me.
And you
find because at least I understand. You know, computer software, I work with programmers, and I'm not totally foreign, so, I mean, I would be the mid-person that you could talk to.
Well, I think
between going with someone who doesn't know, who's still fighting with the any key equation.
Yeah, I'm talking about going even further back, because we're starting to see that if you try and copy WoW, you're going to be a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And the games that are starting to become way more popular are... way simpler, have much less. Forget that. They're way simpler, and you're going to get to a point where you're going to need to teach people in a tutorial like how to use mouse lock.
Yeah.
We did a test where it was essentially, how many of your moms live nearby? Give them the demo and get them to play, and just watch exactly what they do for the first hour. And it was amazing that. My mom's a Luddite, so she has absolutely no idea how to use a computer. So I threw her in front of an MMO for the first time, and she had all kinds of just conceptual problems with WASD and mouse look. And that was even before.
See, but here's another problem, you know, because I play Second Life, you know, I was a cameraman for 20 years, so I understand perspective. But here's the issue with mouse look. Why don't you call it something that people use regular language every now and then? Say perspective view. I mean, there are ways of getting around it if you pull out of the buzzwords. Because
but I mean, even perspective is kind of...
It's a start.
Yeah.
A start. And then if they don't understand perspective, you can give them, like when I used to teach perspective of lenses, it's easy to show perspective. You know, a telephoto brings the background and foreground together, so you show what that looks like. This is a perspective. And then they understand what the word perspective. So using different words... and simple images to me, the way I approach it. I mean,
well,
it seems to me that it's doable.
Kind of something that goes off of this, though, is if we put so much effort into making it accessible to literally everyone, then you're kind of taking away from.
I'm not saying you have
spending
to.
Make, on the
I've never said you make it accessible, but you make it understandable.
Mm.
It's understandable. It's understandable once you understand.
In. So I'm sure that as people go forward, they might be integrating more. It would be good to integrate more like common language. Like even interface.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, you can't sanitize it that much because having that language, having that vocabulary, really creates a sense of community. It sort of creates a sense of belonging, which is part of the enjoyment of
mm-hmm.
you know learning the language is.
But
part
you
of
can,
the fun.
I think you can still have that, but if games as they seem, because for the most part, it's my understanding, a lot of games in terms of game development has reached a maturation, and you want to start pulling in more people like me, who have been exploring games and starting to play more, but find such an impediment, because you know they're assuming things like that they, I know what a patch note is.
Well, that really gets into casual gaming, which is kind of a different.
Yeah, but
casual than we saw here,
but I would want to play more games that people consider more difficult, but I mean, my barrier to entry, you know, I like to learn in stages, just like I learn software. I like, you know, you learn Adobe, you learn to do certain basic things, and then you go down the layers palettes, and you go down the history palettes, and you learn more and more to make yourself better and better. I don't see why you can't roll out a game that way in terms of teaching someone.
I think it's also
on.
An issue because the way the MMOs are built, like when they're first built, they're kind of small and enclosed, and then you start expanding on it, it gets almost unbearably complex.
And the tutorials are usually the last thing to go in.
Yeah.
Which actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have to fine tune every other mechanic, and then you're going back and saying, okay, how do I teach this to someone?
Okay.
When you start changing around, when you do start changing around terms, gaming communities will hold on to the terms they've already learned. Like, for example, a lot of my friends are very much into Rock Band.
Mm-hmm.
Rock Band has
Star Power.
Overdrive. We still call it Star Power.
Yeah.
It's not Star Power. It's Overdrive, but we call it Star Power.
Mm-hmm.
Even more egregious example is Han, because it's Dota. Dota is a very complex game, you know, relatively speaking. There are a lot of heroes. There are a lot of items. There are a lot of, you know, just very specific vocabulary terms. And Han is basically all of that in a standalone engine with new names for 99% of games. Everyone still uses the Dota name, at least. Yeah, it mix and match, but it's sort of this weird pigeon of...
Yeah, same in League of Legends. Whenever anyone has a question or something, they're like, the first thing anyone asks someone else is, have you played Dota? If your answer is yes, then you instantly have something you can say to them. So, I mean, you can try to introduce new terms, but I mean, the problem is you're trying to integrate new people into it. You have the existing game base that has the set terms.
Well, let me turn the argument around a little bit by saying, don't you want to expand the size of the people who are playing the game?
Not necessarily,
no. Because the problem
is elitism again.
It's elitism, and also it's especially in MMOs when you have to do something together with other people. You don't want to play with someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
But that's a player perspective.
I'm talking about a company who's giving money to make a game, and they're expecting a certain, you know, ROI, and that's the end of the story. So we have on one side, you know, the exclusivity, which gives a sense of self-esteem to people who understand it, and then we have the company who wants to make more money from their game. If
they want to make more money, but there are already a lot of gamers
it's worth considering that the cases we talk about here are games that are not particularly targeted towards bringing in new audiences.
Mm-hmm. Which
they're
is not, you know,
primarily about cannibalizing audiences that exist now, whether it be imitating the way WoW operates as an MMO or doing the Dota style in a standalone engine. The idea there is to try and draw as high a percentage of the original population of target players as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So in those situations, I don't think you gain much by catering to casual players or making it terribly different from what you are trying to give them an alternate version of.
It would have to be monetarily worth it that you would get more money from bringing these new people than if you could... You'd have to get more from the new people than if you literally could take everyone from the existing base and transfer it over to your...
Can I ask throw a larger question out to the MMO developers here? How much would you say, percentage-wise, of your development effort do you spend on retaining the customers that you already have, like retaining your paying monthly customers, versus drawing in new ones?
Or
harvesting from other groups?
Well, we have one developer right now out of the bunch that we have who's working specifically on revamping the old game, because it's a two-year-old game. Like, design conventions 2 years ago were completely different. It was more about making the player run the farthest from point A to point B. So, oh my, they're spending more time on the game, they're spending more money. Nowadays, it's more about trying to reach out to casual market, like trying to keep them entrenched, like enjoyable, small snippets, not making them group at low levels, because that's very bothersome to some people if they want to have their own adventure. Like, just the reward system. But yeah, we are actively going back, and I think WoW is even doing it too now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going back and revamping the old game. And they're also pulling in that nostalgia aspect. Like, oh my god, Anixia is level 80 now. Holy shit. It's like, okay, a dragon you killed 100 times, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you get it now.
No, that's a really good question, because MMO developers have had to relook at that question against recently, because historically you could argue that when you bring out an expansion, you're not going to attract any new players. It's all about retention and increasing the lifetime of your existing players. And the once a game's released, you get one shot at releasing it. The big way to get another influx of new players would be a representation of the offer, which you don't see very much in MMO games. Or if you have, they traditionally haven't been very successful. So it's all about the launch. If you scrub your launch,
yeah.
By that you mean like a collector's edition or deluxe edition?
Yeah,
you know,
like a redo. Like when EverQuest did the, we're gonna up the polys on all the models, stick it in a new box, include some expansions, put some new content in. There you go. And I'm not even sure if that was
the best example I could think of a failing launch and then trying to recapture players was Age of Conan.
Yeah, I was about to say Age of Conan.
It pretty much, like, the first 20 levels of it was, wow, this game is so amazing, and then all of a sudden you kind of slowly, you run out of stuff, and then you just hit this level, and it's just like, there's nothing here. What'd they do? And they've been trying to get people back from that. And,
like level 50 characters.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, look, you get a free, and it's like, you're not going to get that bad taste out of people's mouths once you mess up that path.
No, it's okay. Also,
I've got a question.
Okay.
Actually, that I'm interested in guilds and just your experience as developers.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of like the casual are actually in guilds? Are guilds predominantly groups of hardcore gamers, or
do
casual MMOs or MMO players mostly play alone, or what is that like? I guess. Maybe not exact numbers, but
yes.
I can speak from experience. But when I was playing WoW, I was almost a part of two guilds at once, basically, because I was in this endgame raiding guild because that was the content that I wanted to access. But I also had this group of friends, basically, who weren't really like. I didn't know them in real life at all, but they, you know, there was this other smaller guild, and when I wasn't raiding, I hung out with them constantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were a guild, but they didn't raid. They grouped for maybe a smaller dungeon or something, and other than that, they just go out and have fun doing whatever. Once I swam around the entire continent with them, we were just bullshitting the whole time. And, you know, so, and I was lucky because I don't think a lot of guilds would accept like that this guy's going off in endgame raiding and he just wants to hang out with us.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, well, you know, basically my explanation was like, you guys aren't doing this stuff. I kind of want to do this stuff, but I still want to hang out with you guys. So can I? You know,
I would imagine the answer to your question is pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have activities in your game that require cooperation of players, it's very appealing for players to then be able to, you know, systematize that experience. And then you want to form guilds and take it from there. I think you have to be careful when you set up systems for guilds and that you need to replicate in-game everything that the player's going to want to do with their guild.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you find out that, for example, if a game has lots of guilds in it and then those guilds have their own dedicated websites,
yeah.
I think you've got to bite the bullet and say, we've probably failed here. They needed a website to do some of the functionality of running their guild, whereas we could have put that in the game, but didn't because we underestimated the important guilds.
Well, I think most guilds, I mean, not the super casual ones, but any above medium casual have their own websites.
I would
the alternative is kind of integrating a web browser into the game, which you're not, or at least forum software.
Well,
there's
also the socialization sites like WoW Army, and then we have My Relo,
But yeah, either way, aside from, you know, the accessing cooperative content and stuff, being in a guild also is just very nice for being able, for having more experienced players to talk to and just, you know, shoot the breeze with. It basically accelerates you up the learning curve a bit. You can kind of plateau as a solo player and then you sort of unlock a higher tier if you join
the
guild.
I kind of wish some of the better games had better mentoring systems. Like, I was playing Atlantica Online, which is like one of the free play games. And I would randomly get presents from high-level players because they got an experience bonus for giving presents to lower players. And I was like, awesome, I got this cool thing.
One game that I could think of that did that well, that kind of went downhill, was Star Wars Galaxies, where you had literally higher-level players could teach lower-level players and they would get the benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you pretty much were encouraged to go back and help people because you were getting stuff out of it, because you were able to press your character. But it wasn't just literally, oh, here you go. You know, it was, you have to go and kind of help them out a little bit if you wanted to kind of progress with them. So you're like, okay, here's what you do. Here's how you do stuff. Come back to me, and I'll get stuff out of it.
Yeah.
That kind of mechanic is very, very popular in Asian games.
Mm-hmm.
They take it above and beyond the kind of thing that City of Heroes does with the sidekick, and
oh,
it's
yeah.
just level bolstering. And then they have things like Master-Apprentice
mm-hmm.
and marriage relationships between players that actually bestow abilities and empowers players in the game. So
that's dangerous territory.
That
I was just going to say
that.
That's getting into
powers.
Dangerous territory.
That's a little issue. Like the Western mentality is like they don't want to. They want everyone equal at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Like they're very apprehensive about even free to play models for a long time
mm-hmm.
because oh well, I don't have money. I only have time. But they don't remember like the time disparity as well to think
yeah.
about. But yeah, it's starting to become more accepted. But yeah, the mentoring systems, I wish, like Final Fantasy XI, doesn't it do like a level scaling thing?
They do now, yeah.
You
they do now.
But when I always
first,
thought that was
yeah, when first, it was pretty
when, they, when it first came out, it was one of the worst systems I ever saw, which was, let's say me and a friend got the game, and we wanted to play together.
Mm.
Well, you can't choose what server you're on, which they do to kind of balance out the population, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So one of you has to get to level 10 and then send an invite to the other player, and then that player can make a new character that you have. They will then have to get to level 10, and then you can actually start playing.
I remember forums like organizing like chain codes and
yeah.
trying to get each other in the
yeah,
same server.
Yeah, it's just like, it's an absolutely horrendous idea to do something like that.
Yeah.
yeah, I stopped playing after like level. I was like, okay, that's it.
Well, that's also something to remember, like especially with the casual trying to bring more players in, catching them up.
Yeah.
Like especially like WoW has changed the leveling curve, and
they have
you know,
the friends account now.
They know all the friends
and
code,
they have
which
gift
people
levels you can
and
give.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
Where you can literally like if you know someone, you can help them out really easily.
Yeah.
I read about something. One guy. He had the level 2 characters to 16.
Oh, yeah, and
then
1 to 16
yeah.
for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, I think they said 20 minutes.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, it took him 20 minutes to get to level 60. So
yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
And then people will think, oh, that's horrible, that's a disparity, but from Blizzard's perspective, that's more people paying.
Yeah, it's another person that we just got.
Yeah.
As
long as you don't do that, I think it's fine, as long as, you know, when you get to the really high level, if you start doing stuff where, oh, because they were help now they're 100% better than anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, now they have a lot of like heirloom items where your level 80 can buy it for your alt.
Yeah.
And you can
but
buy
that,
it earlier.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
But it doesn't actually
doesn't,
ruin.
Yeah.
Like when you get to
yeah.
the end of the game, it's not like you have an advantage over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're already
else.
Giving you mounts at level 20 again. Anyway, I had to wait till I was 40 to get my mount.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I left World of Warcraft because I thought mounts were at 30.
Uh-huh.
And then it wasn't, and I was like, I'm done. I can't walk faster. I don't care anymore.
I got a travel form. I still stop. Still not good enough.
So yeah, catching players up. Achievements too. That's something to think about. Like they have little casual achievements.
I don't think any game has actually done anything really exciting with achievements yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
the
WoW achievement system doesn't really do much. I mean, you get maybe a title here and there.
Yeah,
it's not
even
most stuff, but the new system that they're
the new
update on Xbox Live, where
mm-hmm.
they actually are applying things like avatar awards to achievements.
Yeah.
That's actually like
that's
the first exciting thing I think. Of, you know, if I can, you know, play through Fallout 3 and then get a Brotherhood of Steel outfit for my avatar,
yeah.
I'd be all for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
so they're trying to steal Home
Slender.
Like
you really feel
basically.
Well, I mean, Turbine could do it where you would get achievements in Lord of the Rings, and then maybe that would contribute to the score that would carry over to DDO.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I know we have the website integration, and you could list it. It's just like WoW Armory. Like, our achievements are more, the titles are more plentifully given, so
yeah.
it's different. Like, WoW is like, oh my god, I got a title. That's like special. LOTRO is like, oh, this is my title for the day. It's awesome.
No, but I think, like, there's something definitely that people have not tapped into is doing more with achievements. I mean,
yeah. Achievements are still kind of new territory, like it's
yeah.
Xbox, they all blew up, and then other MMOs started integrating them out pretty much any game, and Steam.
Yeah, everything has
so
yeah.
anything has to have achievements of
yeah,
sorts. And Warhammer, I like their achievements, they're sort of interesting. Because they're kind of really hidden, so like when
yeah.
you got, you're like killed something, you got an
achievement. Yeah, they were very interesting.
And you can go buy like little things to put on yourself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's probably a great way to put with achievements, where you don't actually make it directly powering, but
mm-hmm.
it's visual stuff
yeah.
is something great that I think everyone...
Some flair.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, achievements at their core, they're like a larger game. Like,
yeah.
They take
yeah.
the game and sort of try to create a structure that more gameplay can happen within this
an
game.
Elder
game.
You
make achievements into really strange behavior.
Right.
Like the achievement where in WoW for the week, for a children's week, you had to drag your kid while you're running a flag.
Mm-hmm.
So no one protected bases in PvP for that whole week because they're running flags with their children.
That's another thing too, to think of how that impacts the actual, what you might call the ecology of the game.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
something
those
that goes
achievements I don't like
flawlessly much.
As
yeah.
much. I mean, the best achievements are ones that a player would maybe, not get them in one playthrough, but if they continued to play just throughout normal play behavior, they would eventually.
Well, I think you should reward also kind of all aspects, like, exploration stuff that people do. I mean, if I want to play Fallout 3 and I want to make it my personal achievement to, find every territory in the map, or...
Well, they have one for that.
I'm just saying.
And then you're like, oh, am I just doing this for the achievement?
Yeah.
Do I really actually want to do this?
Yeah, I mean, like, if I personally want to do it, and I'm getting rewarded afterwards, that's something really nice. And then on the same note, you're getting achievement... People who farm achievement points will do it also. So now it's kind of win-win.
Did Trey remember that talk?
I'm not sure.
The ethics of farming achievements.
Well, the example is, like, when Valve started implementing achievements for Team Fortress 2, the first ones that they did were medic achievements, which were terrible because they asked you to do all these things that a good medic would not do.
Well, the other problem is that, just if we're going off Team Fortress 2, they had the achievement farming rooms, which was just an absolutely insane concept. It's like, okay, you're not playing the game, you're doing just really silly things in this little room.
Yeah, it's not a grind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's built so that you can get them as easily as possible.
Yeah.
They'll change the rules or something. When I went into a medic, I only once have I ever gone into an achievement farming room, and it was specifically for the medic, where it was like, I got 20 Uber charges in a minute because it just...
Do casual players even know about the existence of achievements? Unless they're integrated in the UI, so they just do something.
What system it is, you see something pop up when you do something.
Yeah,
you're like,
they're probably aware
like,
they don't care.
Cool, something happened. I got something.
Yeah, I guess
you
the question
something.
Is more how many of them actually look at what they may be.
Yeah.
And then Final Fantasy 4 integrated, like, if you uncovered the whole map, you got, like, potions or something. And that first, like, couple hours of the game, you get 5 potions, that, like, you're like, whoa, that's very helpful. Because you're very low on potions. Achievements. I didn't really talk about. We mentioned PvP.
PvP is a...
It's a big box.
It's a touchy subject.
PvP versus PvE is as much an argument as casual versus hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's the big goal that developers are trying to do, it seems, is trying to mix the two in a way that it doesn't alienate. If you can do PvE, you can do PvP. You're not doing A or B. You can do both, and it's not really a simple solution.
I think that's something that we can also learn from Asian games on. But again, it's a big basis on the way they play the games that makes it work that well. But yeah, if you are sieging a castle, that castle is being defended by other players. But the game itself, for you to progress, requires you to siege castles. That type of combination.
But then you're kind of forcing someone who doesn't necessarily want to do PvP into doing it if they want to do PvE stuff.
Right.
So
I guess if you could frame the question for me, because I've never been too clear on the distinction. Like, if you're playing against other players, but they can't communicate to you and they're operating as a unit, like, is that not VE?
Well, no. Here's the problem. PvP is harder because, debatably, PvP can be harder because you, like, if you're doing PvE, you always know the monster's going to do this, then that, or this and then one of these two things, or some, it's some algorithm for the computer, really easy to figure out usually. PvP, you don't know what the person's going to do, so it's not as simple as, okay, if I just know whenever they do that, because you may follow a set of rules, then all of a sudden they do something completely unexpected, and now the person's frustrated because it's like, oh, I don't know what to do now.
I guess I didn't understand that would be like, or that was an appeal for players to speak that way. But
it's a scaling level of difficulty. I mean, in an MMO, you can't say, put me on hard mode or something. Or people look at it both ways and say one is harder than the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in a panel I was in earlier today, the idea had come up about doing better at giving variable victory conditions. Like, you know, you may lose the war, but you held them off for 20 minutes. Here's your reward for that. I think that might help as far as, you know, being able to curve up the expectations keeping the mechanics.
That'd be a great idea if you got rewarded, not necessarily for
it's also scaling issues,
but
a mass fleet, like MMOs are hard enough to step in there to begin with.
Yeah.
And then you start with exponentially scaling things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's more of a systems limitation most of the time.
Well, and I guess that's, you know, look at it early. Look at it, you know, don't try and put this into a game that you already have.
I mean, also in the development cycle, the problem is that you can only dedicate your time to so much stuff.
And even if you can make it QAing all of that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't necessarily, okay, I'm going to make a game and it's going to have this many hours of PvE content and, you know, all this kind of PvP and all this and all that. And then you're just going to end up with a plate of stuff that either is not finished or you're just going to have to start dropping.
And then from the perspective of the developers, like, I create content, some raiding guild eats through it in, like, a night,
mm-hmm.
and then how long is it going to take the casual players, though, to actually... Because the raiding guild's disseminating information, but who's actually checking, and, maybe it might take them, like, 3 months. They're getting 3 months out of that,
WoW is the classic example of when WoW first came out, there was, like, statistics that, like, you know, 3% of player base has never seen, like, I don't know, the end of Molten Core. That's probably exaggerated, but... And now... I mean, now pretty much everyone, well, not everyone, but like the numbers.
I've never seen it.
The numbers have scaled.
You could probably do it with
incredibly.
Three people now.
Yeah. It would take a long time to get there.
Yeah.
I haven't done it.
Yeah.
I mean, but now it's like, they've kind of scaled it, so now there's a huge, like, try to get as much content to everyone.
Mm-hmm. That was, when, right before I quit was when they first released Naxxramas. And that, it was really a shame because at the time it was supposedly one of the best designed instances in the game. It was really beautiful, and maybe 0.1% of players were ever going to be able to see it at the current level.
But then the
cap.
Problem is when they re-released it for
that
the beginning of Lich King, like some players had seen it like 50,000 times,
and then
like,
people
didn't want to
do
go through that again.
Like, and then the problem is you're kind of offending the hardcore player base where it's like, I worked so hard to get to this, and now it's like everyone does it.
Well,
no,
you
I
did it first. There you
mm-hmm.
go.
I mean,
that's the thing. Now
enjoy your first, and let everyone else see what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying
it's
bad.
Well, now they've done that. Is they'll go back and nerf things after a while. Like
yeah.
the hardcore players there for months, and they're like, oh, no, it's a little easier. You can,
mm-hmm.
and then that causes a little contention with hardcore players. Like, oh, this is my special thing.
Yeah. Before I was the only one to see this, and then.
Now
I can't compare my time trials
that
I did 2 months ago.
Well,
yeah,
now
exactly.
they've also tried to fix that with their. They put in those mounts you can only get for a certain amount of time.
But then
who cares about mounts? Like, the cabinet didn't even get shit about
mounts. Yeah, and well, now, but with, again, what you said with like going back and revamping old content to.
That's just nostalgia.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I remember back in the day.
I mean, it's a great kind of time saver in a way, because now you have all these new people who've never done any of that stuff, and it's like, look, now if I just reintroduce it, I don't have to do half the amount of work because it's already there.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm reintroducing it, all these people think it's new, and these other people are just like, whatever else we'll do.
Hmm. And then also, I was interested in a subscription mode, like with the free-to-play. Like, some casual gamers, they only want to play a little bit or give it a shot. Give it a try. They can't. They're like, oh, $15 a month investment. Or you can only really afford one MMO, like, on that subscription model for a month. And if you choose WoW, it's like, oh, all these other MMOs that are pretty good are pretty screwed.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are trying to nuzzle in with that, with the subscription models, because, like, oh, I can play Runes of Magic and pay $10 for a horse, and then I'm pretty satisfied for a while. And then they might suck you in with other things. But I think that's interesting.
You're talking about scaling up or upselling? Or?
Well, that's what they do with the free-to-play model. Like, when the Runes of Magic, they've suckered you in because you start, you get a little package that's packaged, and you open it for your first level, and you get like a dress or like your spellcaster, so you get a robe. And then you get level 2, and you can open it again, and you get something else. Like at level 3, you get like a 24-hour horse. And so you get 24 hours with your horse, and then the next day, you're like, oh, my horse is gone. Oh, I can pay $10 for a permanent horse. I like that horse. And then they'll keep doing that, so. Like, maybe 5% of your player base is paying, like, $100 a month. But then the other people are like, oh, they don't really care.
Well, the other model, which is kind of think I personally now, but it's something like Hellgate London.
Oh, yeah.
Or where it's like, here, buy a lifetime subscription fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then one little catch is if the game goes under next week because, you know, we didn't do anything with
it. Well, Champions is doing that.
And
now.
Champions is doing that.
So people are
kind
of iffy. They're
it's
like,
the same exact guy who's doing it also.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So
I saw some posts. I saw some posts like people going, oh, it's still an NDA and people aren't really sharing information.
Yeah,
they're asking
it's Bill Roper. I mean, I'm in the beta. I'm not going to break NDA.
Like, people in Lotro have lifetime subscriptions. They like to say,
yeah,
it.
I mean,
now it's been paid off. Like, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, there's good ways and bad ways to do it, but if you're going to take lifetime subscriptions, you're going to have to, it's kind of like an obligation to do stuff. Don't be money, goodbye.
Yeah.
Next game.
The Hellgate one that got a little too big for its britches, or they bit off more than they could chew.
I think the government will come down on you because, I mean, heck, when you get go to a health club, you know, and the health club below, they have to maintain a certain amount in escrow to pay you back for your membership if you were.
Well, the problem with lifetime subscriptions is like people aren't going to read the fine print.
Like, that's also the problem with the monetary versus virtual. Like if this company goes under, I think you were talking about if a company goes under that you've invested like free to play money into,
mm-hmm.
what happens?
Yeah,
you don't have any rights over the digital objects that you may or may not have bought.
Yeah. So I mean.
So instead of paying for time, like, oh,
well, the legal profession is chomping at the bit because they want to make virtual assets something that can be transferred as becomes a part of your will. Your real life will.
Well, I mean, right
I'm
now,
I'm a WoW character to my kids.
I would not. I leave it to us.
No, but I'm talking about the case like in Second Life,
yeah.
where this guy built tremendous amount of virtual assets. He unexpectedly died without a will, and all the people who contributed, not only did his estate not get access to his assets, but all the people who contributed, Lyndon wouldn't give it to them.
Hmm.
So that
that's
was the end of the story.
Yeah, I mean,
and that represents the real...
Yeah,
I'm not talking about, like,
most of
this represents...
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, Second Life is a little bit of a stranger case.
Because you're paying money in the first place. Like
you're kind of building your own stuff, in a way, whereas in other, like, MMOs, like, you're kind of... It's the same as if you're playing a console game, except it's...
You don't own the stuff, you're just renting the time.
Yeah, you're just renting the time from them. So you're saying, here's $15 a month, I get to play for this time, okay, when I'm stopped, there's 15, you know.
Hey guys, you're welcome to go long, but next session's starting in about 10. So.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, a big thing that people have always tried to, I mean, for a really long time to get around is, how can I make money off the virtual environment?
Yeah.
And
then that's also...
not get sued.
That's also a casual hardcore debate, like with the gold farmers.
Yeah, gold. Oh, well, also I was thinking of back in the beginning of WoW, there was this tool called Collider, which
got
in a huge amount of trouble and actually got sued for a lot more than they're worth.
Yeah, that judgment, people were like waiting on it, like, it's going to open a Pandora's box.
It was
a bot.
You pretty much could have it do whatever you want. It was, you could have it farm for you, and it was kind of, I mean, Blizzard considered it breaking the system because you weren't necessarily doing stuff yourself.
You could go for dinner while it was farming for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And the people that made the bot were making
like
fun of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, Blizzard kind of cracked down on it and cracked down and actually went off after the company and then sued the hell out of the company.
I mean, lawyers are looking for anything that they can get a piece of action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
Also, the thing with the gold farming is... a more casual person, like, oh, I really want to break into raiding, but I work like 10 hours a day.
I
can't really farm.
The leisure class of MMOs. I don't have the time to do the work all you schlubs have to do.
Yeah,
but I'm entitled to enjoy my time and money left.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah, gold farming is really catered towards the casual a lot because it's like, I want to get a better character, but I don't want to spend time. So
that's why the free to play model is sort of kind of picking up again.
Yeah,
the argument I always heard was from people who, you know, I had friends who bought gold,
yeah.
and I was like, come on, like, why are you buying gold?
Yeah.
He's like, well, you spend your five hours earning, you know, finding gold in the game.
Yeah.
I spend my 5 hours working and making money
yeah.
that I then use to buy gold.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
and then I have a little money left over too, so.
But yeah.
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 We have to wrap up.
There's a prestige to that when you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have.
Well, actually, in MMOs,
there's also
a
stigma.
There's a negative stigma when all of a sudden you realize someone has ridiculous amounts of money because they didn't actually work for them. There's,
yeah.
In almost any MMO, there's a stigma associated with it where it's like...
That's why free-to-play MMOs are so hard to accept. They're like, oh, no,
yeah.
no, real money,
all of a sudden my character is better than yours.